Hi, I'm Dan Krynas from the Leader of Learning podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure to check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, today I'm talking with Mark C. Perna. He's the founder and CEO of TFS, Tools for Schools. But today we're talking about his first book called Answering Why, Unleashing Passion, Purpose, and Performance in Younger Generations. This is such a cool conversation. It's all about understanding generations Y and Z. You're going to love this. Great power, great enthusiasm, great passion, and what a great discussion. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Mark C. Perna is the founder and CEO of TFS, Tools for Schools in Cleveland, Ohio, a full-service strategic consulting firm whose mission is to share and support every client's passion for making a difference. As an international expert on generations Y and Z, Mark has devoted his career to empowering educators and employers to unleash the tremendous potential of today's young people, both in the classroom and on the job. After successfully parenting two millennials as a single father, Mark has become a passionate advocate for bridging the generational divides that are contributing to America's profound skills gap. Parents, schools, districts, businesses, and state organizations across North America have successfully used Mark's insights and strategies to connect more effectively with the younger generations. Mark is frequently cited as a national expert in education, enrollment, retention, and performance. A dynamic and motivational public speaker, Mark frequently delivers keynote speeches at national and statewide events. He has published numerous articles in national publications as a recognized voice in student engagement and success. His first book, Answering Why, Unleashing Passion, Purpose, and Performance in Younger Generations, was written to help educators, employers, and parents understand generations Y and Z and inspire them to greater performance in all areas of life. Mark enjoys inspirational movies, theater, travel, golf, and time with his family, especially his granddaughters. He resides in Cleveland, Ohio. Mark, thanks for joining me today, and say hi to everyone.
Well, hello, everyone. Steve, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I appreciate you joining me, and I love the book, and we're going to get into it in just a second. It reads so well, and it just has a great feel to it, and all the passion that I've heard you on their talks and different places that I've watched you and your videos and such, it just comes out in your writing, and it's an awesome book. I think you've hit a home run.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate that more than you know, because when you're writing something, you never really know, until it kind of gets out there, whether you've actually captured, that sense and that feeling that comes through you when you speak. So thank you. It means a lot what you said.
You're welcome. So what I'd like to do is let's begin our talk by answering why, by going to the end of the book. And, you know, what I'd like you to do is you make a reference at the end that's to the movie Apollo 13. And it's, you say that it's your favorite quote, and it goes like this: "From now on, we live in a world where man has walked on the moon. It wasn't a miracle. We just decided to go." Could you talk about, why, first of all, the movie a little bit, just why you like it, why it kind of hits you, and then what that quote's all about, why it's your favorite?
Boy, you keyed in on such a beautiful point, and it's kind of poignant to start with it, at the beginning of this podcast. So 1995, Apollo 13 came out, and I went to the theater. I'm a big Ron Howard fan, big Tom Hanks fan, and I watched it on the big screen. And when I heard this line, and my line, it actually happens at the beginning of the movie. It so impacted me that I memorized it on the spot, because at the time we didn't have cell phones that you could, back in 95, that you could write it down in your notes pad. Right. So I had to memorize it, and when I heard it, I thought, wow, it says, "From now on, we live in a world where man is walked on the moon. It wasn't a miracle. We just decided to go. To me, I find those the most incredible words of hope that I've ever heard. Because to understand the power of that phrase, you have to back up to May 25th, 1961, you know, 8 years earlier when John F. Kennedy stands up before a joint session of Congress, later at Rice University, where he says the words that most of us, you know, have heard before, right? I commit this nation by the end of this decade that we will land a man on the moon and return him safely to the earth. We do these things not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Those words were spoken 20 days after Alan Shepard made the first U.S. manned space launch. Lasted all of 15 minutes. We barely had enough technology to get him off the pad and watch him fall 15 minutes later. And yet to lay out that broad goal, and literally hundreds of thousands of Americans worked tirelessly to create things that had never been created before. And when I think of that quote and I think about what we do in our lives, and I'm thinking there's so many times we think that things are unreachable or unaccomplishable. And in many cases, they're not. You know, it's just you have to make the decision to go. And so I've used that in my life in everything that I've done. And in 95, and I don't speak about this too often, you know, because it's so embarrassing, but in 1996 and 95 were the worst times of my life. I was going through some really tough challenges. And so those words really helped pull me out of where I was. And in the last 22 years have truly launched, you know, my business, my career, my speaking career, my publishing career, and become an international thought leader, largely because those words spoke so heavily to me.
That's awesome. And by the way, I also have to say this. What's cool is that those words spoke to you where everybody else is keying in on the failure is not an option line. And
true.
And, you know, it's funny when you read this, because that's the line that spoke to me. I can remember this, and I had to go back and I rewatched that part so I could see that part that you were talking about. It's like, oh yeah, this is cool. Cause you know, it's too often, you know, people don't go, they can't make the decision to get off the launch pad. They can't make the decision to just do whatever it is they've been thinking about. And they just sit there and kind of, you know, spin their wheels, however you want to say it. Why do you think people get stuck like that?
You know, great question. I think people get stuck because we just kind of get into a routine. We get into doing the things that we've always done all the time. And so, you know, in my speeches, the last thing I do is Apollo 13. I end with that quote. So, you know, I might do a 90-minute or 2-hour keynote speech to, you know, 1,000 or 1,500 people. And at the end of that, I want to inspire, you know, whomever is in the audience. And in many cases, it's educators or employers and parents. Sometimes it's all three. It could be an educator who's an employer and a parent. And to give them kind of that view of anything is possible, you can take all of the things we just spoke about. And in the book, you know, what I'm really saying is, hey, you can take everything you just learned throughout this journey we had together while you were reading this, and you can accomplish this. You can interact better with the younger generations. You can engage them. You can answer their why. You can get them to see a vision. You can get them to perform at a significantly higher level. It's not a miracle to do that. You just have to make the decision to go. And that's, I love the synergy that creates and kind of the visual that it creates that you actually can make this effective change in the way you deal with the younger generations.
Oh, you're right on the money. It's just, it does. And it's, you know, one of those things that kind of gives you goose pimples, especially when it comes at the end, because you start thinking, is this just going to be something I read, or am I going to do something with it? And you're kind of challenging us to do something with it. Let's go, move.
Yeah, that's it. Because otherwise, then you spent 4.5 hours reading a book, or however long it takes some people to read. Two and a half if you skim it quickly. But, you know, you spent the time, you invested the effort. And far too many people, I think, you know, in my experience, is they spend that time, but then they don't implement what they actually just learned. And so if I can inspire someone not only to understand it, but then also to implement it, then I think then we can help each other grow and truly make a bigger difference.
Excellent. So let's get into a little bit about who Generations Y and Z, the and you call them the Y generations. Who are they? And when you're talking about it, can you get into a little bit about what a generational rift is? Because this is very important in the beginning of your book.
Yeah, absolutely. I can start and I can explain a generational rift, or, you know, is basically this, is the, you know, the older generations think the younger generations are missing out, and the younger generations think the older generations are missing out. And so that creates this rift, because we're all coming from a different perspective. You know, the older generations are thinking the way they grew up, the way that they were raised, the way that they've learned, the way that they've matured, and they've taken all of that, and now they're trying to almost make the younger generations go through that same maturation process. But that's not the reality of the world. The world is that they've grown up in a very different world. And by the way, they're exactly the way the older generations have made them. So, I laugh with baby boomers all the time, and I say, you know, you complain all the time about young people. I said, but if you want to know why they're the way they are, look in the mirror every morning. We as a culture have completely made them the way they are. They're just reacting to how we raise them. And so that generational divide can be crossed, and we can cross that chasm if we truly understand where they're coming from. And so the younger generations, I break down, there's two generations I'm talking about. I talk about Generation Y millennials and Generation Z coming up right behind them. And so Generation Z goes from, you know, fetus to 17 years old, and Generation Y millennials go roughly 18 to 38 years old. And so, you know, so 38 and younger are what I call the Y generation, W-H-Y generation, because they need an answer to that question for everything they do. And this may be an aha moment, Steve, because it is for a lot of people when I speak around the country, is, you know, if you ask a young person, you know, you and I ask, someone 38 and younger to do something, and they look back at us and they say, well, why should I do it that way? Or why should we do it that way? Most of us in this country take that as a smart aleck response, and we give the all-American response back, which is, of course, because I said so.
No, no.
That's why you should do it, right? Or it's near cousin, because we've always done it that way. And the aha moment for people is when I share with them, I go, but they don't mean it as a smart aleck response. When we ask someone to do something and they look back at us, they go, well, why should we do it that way? Or why should I do it that way? What they're really saying to us is, you know, why do we do it this way? There has to be a better way to do this. There has to be a way to do this, you know, in the cloud. There must be a better way to do this on Google something. There must be a way that we can take this to another level and get a bigger impact. And yet we don't give them the opportunity to try, because we don't give them the full explanation of why it's done that way. And so I share with organizations and parents all the time. I was like, there's two ways to look at the younger generations. You can either look at them as a challenge to be solved, or you can look at them as a tremendous resource to be unleashed. And if you look at them as a tremendous resource to be unleashed, then what I have to say in my speeches and in my books and in my writings will absolutely resonate with you, as it's resonated with people around the country, because it's how they want to take it to another level. And we just have to give them the opportunity to do it.
That's awesome, because it too often, I mean, you do have people who get stuck in this mindset that, you know, that any sort of questioning is a question of my authority, as opposed to just help me understand, you know, or help, let's take a look at this. Or could there be other answers? Is it okay to find a different way of getting, you know, does 2 + 2 have to equal 4, you know?
Well, actually it does. and I only said that for the benefit of any math teacher listening today.
Oh, come on.
They're in the background thinking to themselves, yeah, of course it does, Steve. It has to equal 4. But no, I get exactly where you're going and exactly what you're talking about. You know, the Generation Z, you know, fetus to 17 years old, they're a remarkable generation. Millennials are a remarkable generation, but Z coming up is going to go at things slightly differently. They're going to be, you know, they're not going to be as prescriptive in the way that they experience education, workforce, and their lives. They're going to be far more, you know, pathway oriented, and they're going to find unconventional ways to get where they want to go. I mean, you know, they grew up in post 9/11, post 2008 financial meltdown, and all the issues and challenges that went along with that time period, and it taught them to be actually concerned about their future. They may not be concerned outwardly, but they are concerned inwardly as to how they're actually going to get where they want to go. And they're already predicted to be the, you know, what will be the largest entrepreneurial generation in history. And nearly 80% of them already report that they want to be their own boss. Now, if that winds up being true in the long haul, that is a cataclysmic shift in workforce development in this country, because if 80% of what is now this large generation coming up wants to be their own boss, then what does that say to the workforce of America and of course other nations as well? So it's an interesting point as we drive young people and connect with them and engage them in a very special way.
You got that right. So let's use this to kind of looking back at the book. You start talking about in the beginning of Answering Why about closing the skills gap. Could you share a little bit about where you're going with this idea of a skills gap that's existed? I think that's probably a good place to go right now.
Yeah, we've got this problem. We've got a challenge here in America today, and it's what I call the skills gap. When it's not just me, I mean, lots of people call it the skills gap. And so the skills gap is it's a simple concept. And so the best way for me to explain it to someone is that there are millions of people who are unemployed in this country, and there are millions of open jobs in this country that we cannot fill. The people who are unemployed can't do the jobs that are filled, and this creates a powerful and large skills gap. There are currently 6.7 million high-paying, high-wage, high-demand jobs in this country that we can't fill, and they're in industries like aviation and aerospace, healthcare, construction, manufacturing, and many, many others. And so employers are screaming to find people that can fill these positions, but we can't find enough people who either want to do those positions or they don't know they exist, which is really what I contend is that most young people today, community members, parents, have no idea that all of these different options and opportunities exist for their son or daughter. And so there are tons of ways people can truly make a difference, give back, make a great income, have a great career. But we're forcing everyone through one lens, and this is creating the skills gap and what I really call the awareness gap, because people aren't aware of how many great things there are to do out there.
You know, and it's, you see it around all the time. I mean, it's kind of like, it appears in many different ways. And I think part of it's just assuming that everybody wants to, I don't know, there's been a real focus on that cookie cutter sort of idea that, you know, everybody's got to want the same sort of things, I guess. And it's just kind of crazy. And I think it's been a big part of why we don't have people in certain industries or certain areas, or even just encouraging this idea to be out there on your own without having that boss.
Well, and you know, I think some of it becomes a little bit short-sighted, in my opinion, is that we're trying to put everyone in this country through the same lens and pathway, and that is, you know, going off to a traditional college route. And trust me, I am a tremendous fan of going to college. I mean, I went to college, my kids went to college, been very successful, but it's not a successful route necessarily for everyone, and not because they can't do it, but because maybe they shouldn't do it because of their interests. So, you know, I believe, you know, that in order to get a young person to understand what's possible in their lives, they need to see all the options and opportunities and then make the best choice for them. So I've got, you know, no issue with you know, anyone going off to a four-year degree and beyond, as long as they know why they're going there, they invest wisely, they go with passion, but they make sure that they get it done, because it's too costly to go do that and not be successful. So they need to understand that, well, you know, there's wonderful opportunities for four-year degrees and master's degrees and PhDs and MDs and JDs and every, you know, all of that is great. There's also wonderful two-year associate's degrees. There's, you know, apprenticeships. There's, you know, certifications and advanced certifications and licensures. There's lots of different ways for young people to get where they want to go. And I think the more we give them the options, opportunities, and let them pick careers and lifestyles that best suit them based on their unique interests, talents, and abilities, the further they will get in the long haul, and they'll see what I call a light at the end of the tunnel so that they can start moving towards it with the skill development and the maturation they need in order to be able to succeed.
Love it. The you know, one of the things that you do in the book very well is you create different imagery that makes you really get where you're going. And one of those images centers around the idea of branch creaking. Could you talk just a little bit about, explain what that is? Because I love this.
Sure, man. I have lived this, Steve, my whole life. So so the metaphor, so I created the metaphor because it actually stemmed from a problem I had when I was 10 years old. And so it all starts in a tree. So, you know, if the audience can picture this beautiful, majestic oak tree, or, you know, some beautiful tree you'd love to climb, the kind of climbing tree that we'd all love to be in. You go up in this tree, you go up as high as you can, because if you're going into the tree, that's the goal. You know, you go up as high as you can, you climb the tree. You go up as high as you can, you go out on a really firm limb, you're standing there, and all of a sudden the limb underneath you cracks. I mean, you literally can hear it and feel it creak right underneath you. Well, there are three things that happen at that moment, and this happened to me when I was 10. First thing that happens is you become singularly focused, right? It doesn't matter what stresses, challenges you had getting into the tree or who you thought was cute at school. You are focused on the problem at hand. Second thing that happens is you start strategic planning. How are you going to get out of this? How do you get back to the safety of the trunk? What are you going to grab? Where are you going to fall? Right? Third thing that happens is you take action. In fact, I would probably submit to you that you take massive action. And all three of those things, focus, plan, and action, happen literally in the blink of an eye, right? You can snap your fingers and you're doing all three of those things. Well, I believe that in our lives, the branch creaks many times. You know, anytime there's a fear of loss or sense of urgency, our branch literally creaks underneath us, and it forces us to focus, to plan, and to take action. And so, you know, I've always believed that growth in our lives happen when we step outside our comfort zone, never when we're inside our comfort zone. So to me, when the branch creaks in our lives is actually a good thing. So that's where the branch creak metaphor comes from, is that because if the branch doesn't creak, if you don't become uncomfortable, you'll never focus, you'll never plan, you'll never take action. And so I think young people today hardly, if ever, hear the branch creak in their lives, because we've made their lives comfortable, because they're never really allowed to go out on the limb. You know, the limb is being held up by millions of parents and organizations and things trying to keep their branch from creaking underneath them, when in fact I think what we've done is we've hurt them long term. Because they need to learn what to do when the branch creaks, because that's where growth happens.
I love that, because it's so, I've been there. I've been in that tree that the branch is creaking. And then when I grabbed onto the other branch, that one did more than creak, you know, and it's like,
yeah, right. Oh. That snapped too.
It's like, oh, this is not good. You know? And that's why I had to laugh when you said, the strategic planning takes place, because yeah, I didn't realize that I became a pretty good expert on strategic planning right away.
Yeah, right. Even at a young age, you can strategically plan your way out of almost anything.
That's awesome. It's so true. And this leads right into this, you know, one of my favorite sections, which is what you've just gotten to, which is in chapter 4, you get into, it's titled Why the Y Generation Doesn't Hear the Branch Creaking, where you talk about and in here you talk about the power of failure. And I think that is, it's so much there that, you know, we have to go outside our comfort zone, because this is what I love inside this chapter, is where you go into that whole talk about being outside our comfort zone, and the idea that this is what, when we do fail, or when we have that stumble, or the branch breaks, or we learn a little bit about that person who might be sawing the branch behind us while we're standing on it, you know, all of that kind of creates, you know, changes us a little bit. But I love this section in your book. Awesome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, because I've been through it in my own life, you know, and I've only recently just started speaking about this, but I mentioned in 95 and 96, you know, I had a really tough time in my life. You know, I had filed bankruptcy due to a failed business venture. I went through a divorce, became a single dad of two young boys, really, 9 and 7. And then I weighed over 400 pounds, and a short amount of time, I wasn't making nearly enough money, by the way, what I was working at. So for us as a family. And so my branch was creaking literally, figuratively, emotionally, psychologically. And literally, I churned everything around in a short amount of time. And in 13 months, I lost 175 pounds and have kept it off. You know, I started this company shortly after that. And in 22 years, I've, you know, become an international thought leader and done, you know, all the things that I've accomplished and the things that you read so graciously at the beginning of the podcast. But all of that because I focused, I planned, and I took action, you know. And so it was tough moments. It was tough going. But it was keeping that focus, that plan, and that action going and moving forward in my life that made all the difference.
Thank you so much for sharing, because that is, you know, it's all of that that obviously has made you into who you are, into that powerful leader and powerful voice for this message that you have. And, you know, and part of what you just talked about, I mean, leads me into a next section, which I also just kind of speaks to me, which is in chapter 5, you talk about the light at the end of the tunnel. And I was going to ask you, what is that? But obviously, what you just described in your life, you had to have some light at the end of the tunnel because you made major changes and you adapted. Can you talk a little bit about what chapter 5, you know, that light at the end of the tunnel is all about?
Yeah, you know, because there's so many things, you know, for as easy a read as the book is, you know, there are so many things that come together in the way the strategies and the understanding how the younger generations, you know, tick. You know, what are they thinking? Why do they think that? How do we adapt accordingly in order to be able to connect and engage them in a very special and powerful way? And the light at the end of the tunnel is simply, you know, it's another metaphor that I talk about in the book, because they need, and certainly we need, you and I and others listening, have to have some light at the end of the tunnel. And for young people, it's what does their career and their lifestyle look like? The tunnel is everything it takes to get to whatever the light at the end of the tunnel is. So it's the work, the labor, you know, the effort, the skill development, the academic rigor. It's what's whatever is necessary to get to the light at the other end. And what's so important to young people today is what is their lifestyle going to look like? You know, I always say career and lifestyle because we tend to pile those things together, but lifestyle is the most important piece of that. So, you know, for a young person today, again, 38 and younger, more than half of every decision they make is based on how it affects their lifestyle. Career has actually become a lifestyle decision. So they lump those things all together. And unless they see a light at the end of the tunnel, unless they see a reason or an answer why they should go through that tunnel, they'll never go through it. They'll never put in the work. They'll never put in the labor. They'll never put in the effort. You know, I get a lot of parents who come up to me. I've had parents come up to me after presentations and throw their arms around me. I've had, you know, people come up in tears saying that they finally think they understand their son or their daughter because they were, again, looking at them like they're lazy and entitled. And this is such a fallacy to me. Almost everything you read, see about younger people today in this country is largely negatively slanted. You know, they're lazy, they're entitled, they're this, they're that. And I go completely the other way. I think they're the most incredible generations to come down the pike. I think they're the most intelligent and resourceful and pit bull like generations that we've ever seen. When they see a want to in their life or a light at the end of the tunnel, a want to, they will move heaven and earth to get to that want to. Our challenge as educators, parents, and employers is getting them to want something. And it's in getting them to want something where the game is played. And so the light at the end of the tunnel is how do you start showing them the things that are possible, the things they're interested in. But that conversation for a young person has to start with lifestyle. It can't start with what do you want to do with the rest of your life? They are daunted by that question. They are daunted, like, what would you like to be? Like, they have no idea for the most part. And if they have a clue, they're simply ahead of their peers and they're now moving down the tunnel to get there. But most don't know where they want to go because it's a daunting illustration for them. And most of them aren't hearing a branch creak because they're so comfortable. So they don't feel like they need to start working on that challenge at this point. So that's where kind of all these things start to kind of work together to get a good understanding of how to motivate and inspire and unleash that passion, purpose, and performance in young people.
And that's going to bring me to ask this question, because it's so right on the money. And, you know, one of the things that, and by the way, you know, you're right. It's almost as if people get paid for every time they get to complain about these generations. It's like, really? One more time. Go ahead. I don't think I heard you complain loud enough. Let's go ahead. Go ahead and do it again.
No kidding.
You know, it's like, can we do it one more time on the news media? Can we do it one more time and this, that, and the other? So, Before we continue, why should a teacher or school administrator read Answering Why?
It's like a playbook. They need to understand who they're dealing with. And I think so many times they don't. They've got bits and pieces of it, but they don't know, you know, the 22 years of strategies working in schools across North America, and even with my own children and raising, you know, two boys, you know, largely on my own, and the fact that they're both self-reliant, independent, you know, and enjoying and loving their lives, and living only 20 minutes from me, and to the point where I haven't written a check to either one of them in like the last, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 years, which is a great accomplishment because they're 31 and 29 today, right? And so they're living on their own terms.
Awesome.
But to me, it's trying to understand how we connect the dots for our educators, our employers, and they need a playbook on what are they thinking and how do they do it. How do they deal, how does respect work today? Because it works completely differently than it did many years ago. You know, young people today expect you to respect them first, and only then will they turn around and respect you. And people have a difficult time understanding that concept, which I go through in the book as well. So it's little things like that, you know, that add up to truly being able to move them further and faster than you could if you didn't have the info.
That's excellent. I think it's so on the money too. It's, you know, it's one of those things. All you have to do is have enough interaction with either of these two generations that become your Y generation, that to understand that that's where you could see people running into, feeling like they're running into a brick wall. This idea that you feel like they're arguing with you, or everything's an argument, or something like that, as opposed to or just want to throw up your hands and go, you just don't understand. Ooh.
But go ahead. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead. That's good.
No, I was going to jump in. I said, it says, here's what's telling. I said earlier, I call them the Y generation, WHY, because they need an answer to that question, you know, with everything that they do. And so Deloitte, the global accounting and consulting firm, did, I don't know, it was like 15, 16 months ago. I don't remember the exact time frame, but they did a survey of millennials. And what they found was roughly 2/3, I think it was like 68% female and 64% male millennials. So roughly 2/3 of the millennial generation plan to leave their current job by the year 2020 is what they reported. And to me, that's an astonishing stat. The number one reason given to me is what's telling. The number one reason given for wanting to leave their job by the year 2020 is that they no longer want to work in an organization where pursuit of the almighty dollar is the only outcome. They want to work in an organization that gives back. They want to work in an organization that has purpose. They want to work in an organization where the pride of their contribution will add to the greater good. And you know what? I don't see that as a bad thing. But business and industry in this country is going to struggle with now creating not only vision they have to create a vision that goes beyond shareholder value and making money. They have to create a vision of how they're going to give back, how they're going to make a difference in their communities, how they're going to allow their younger workforce to not only work to help them, garner that, that shareholder value, but how are they also going to make a difference along the way? Because that's what's going to help stop the revolving door in and out of an organization. And so that becomes paramount.
Excellent. This is, as you read through the book, and you think about interacting with kids and helping, trying to figure out how to help them decide where their future's going, or even just trying to help them, just interacting with them. And when I say kids, that's the teacher in me, the educator in me, but the oldest in these generations as well, as they're asking their questions and looking at what their world's going to be. I just think that it's such a different, I guess the best way, I'm stumbling right now, because one of the things that I want to put into words is that I can't imagine having, someone told me the other day that we're with kids now that so many of them have no concept what certain, low-tech technologies were, and they've grown up completely with cell phones, just for as an example, and And it's funny because lately I've been watching movies that are some of my favorite from the past, that, and I start thinking, what, how would this movie be changed if you added a cell phone into it? And, you know,
it might be over a lot earlier.
Exactly. It is. And it's the same thing with, you know, just the internet and stuff like that. It's like suddenly all this stuff is just completely thrown out the window. And you think about how wide open just information is, that it would make you want to question why. I mean, I'm amazed at all the information that I can find to help me fix something that in the past I would have had to find somebody who was a fixer, as opposed to now, you know, I can go on there and find these people who recorded themselves figuring out how to fix the taillight on that certain specific year of that Toyota Camry or whatever. And it's just amazing to me, all that type of stuff. And that has to have had an impact on them, as well as the fact that lots of their video games and their interactions on the internet are collaborative. They're working together trying to solve whatever these problems are. And, that's a far cry from my playing Asteroids or or Pac-Man.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and I did all of those things. And, well, you know, and let's take it like one step further. So I just read an article where just over 80% of Generation Z are already on YouTube on a regular basis. So they will be using YouTube for everything. And so, but here's the difference. Look at the difference. So I look at YouTube as this is an educational channel, because this is where you go, exactly like you just said, you go to find out how to do something. I want to do X, Y, or Z, and I go to YouTube, and there's a video for anything you're trying to do. My son Matt, who's 31 years old, and for the past 5 years they've lived in a home that needed a lot of work. My son had no training to do anything. He's done it all using YouTube. That's awesome. He has gone out to use that as an educational resource to find out what he wants. And then students go to school, and school is kind of forced on, you know, young people in many cases, you know, where it's like school is kind of what happens to you, but YouTube is what you go to be able to interact. And so there needs to be a way to kind of bridge that divide between how do young people interact with technology to learn the things that they want to learn, or making them excited to learn the things they need to learn, and doing it in a way that's outside, you know, the old ways of doing education, which is still too prevalent, you know, out there.
Right. I love what you're getting at. So as we're kind of starting to draw towards the end with our time here now, and one of the things I wanted to get into is at the end of your book and in your website, and before we go, I want to make sure that you have a chance to kind of tell everybody a little bit about some of the stuff you do online as well, where they can find you. Could you explain the Wade factor and be a Wade and the recognition that comes with it?
Yeah, I met a gentleman back in 2003. His name was Wade. He was driving a rental car bus at the Baltimore airport, and I was traveling through, and I was pretty stressed. He was one of the most remarkable men that I had ever met, because in a span of 10 minutes, he took complete strangers and turned them into people who were almost, you know, seemingly best friends, at least in that short 10-minute drive out to the rental car facility. And without going into the full story, because it usually takes me 8 to 10 minutes to do that, and I don't want to take that time here, but he so impacted me that I wrote an article called The Wade Factor, and he's part of the last chapter of the book, because I find it so inspirational and motivational to talk about this gentleman and how he, in very simple ways, was charming, passionate, and extremely funny, and would make you feel better on your journey. And in the way he told the story and his passion for the city of Baltimore, and I had been back to Baltimore many times since after meeting Wade, and I've never seen another bus driver do this and so this was pure him. This was just Wade. And so I created this Wade Award on my website for people to nominate people who share kind of what I call the Wade Factor. And the video of me telling about the Wade Factor is on the site. And so you can hear the story and then also nominate somebody. And we do call for nominations. And then we've given away the award, and the people get a certificate that they're a Wade. And it's become quite popular and fun. And it's part of what makes my job really, really enjoyable.
It's so cool, because I had been searching your website, and I enjoyed reading the the people who receive those Wade recognitions. That was so cool. And I, what a neat, neat thing to do. I love that. Be a Wade.
Be a Wade. I've got organizations that have stickers that people wear. Be a Wade, or I'm a Wade, or you know. And I get people who come up all the time and they say, "Does Wade know this happened?" So this is kind of the cool part of the story. If we have just a minute or two.
Oh sure,
left.
Go right ahead.
So it's like, so this is kind of a cool part of the story. Is Wade in a 10-minute routine trip to the airport? You know, back in 2003, so impacted one traveler, me, that I wrote an article that went into a magazine to roughly 35,000 people, was reprinted in a magazine to roughly 75,000 people. I've used them at the end of every keynote address I have given in two countries for the past 15 years, which is 50, 60, 80 speeches a year. And he's the final chapter in the book I just wrote. So hundreds of thousands of Americans know about Wade. He has no idea it goes on today. None. Wow. Zero, zip, has no clue. And people come up to me all the time and they say, you know, have you found Wade? Can you find Wade? I was like, I didn't find Wade. I don't know where to find Wade. I've tried. They don't have records back that far, you know, and it's like, but it's like there's this gentleman walking around and people are using his name and they're talking about him and they're acting like him and he has no idea it goes on today. And I say that in many speeches that I give near the end. As that's an incredible call and recognition to all of us that you never know what you do and what you say and where it goes, the ripples in a pond. And Wade created incredible ripples because I've shared his story and he doesn't even know that those ripples exist. Pretty powerful.
That's very powerful. It starts making me think about different people who you're so glad that your world's connected just for that little bit of time because of whatever it is they did. And that's so cool.
Well, and bring it back to teachers. Teachers are in the most incredible position to be Wades because in a moment they can truly impact the direction of a life. And that's, to me, is extraordinary. I mean, we all have that ability, but teachers are at the front lines of that, especially at impressionable moments at all ages. And so when I tell that story to teaching staffs and to administrators and at the college and high school, middle school, and elementary levels, I love the fact that, as they leave excited to be Wades, that they're going to go impact 50, 75, 100, maybe more people just in the next year. And when you look at the ripples in a pond of that, if we could just spread that more, and that's kind of what the Wade Award is for, is to try to spread that as much as we can.
Just awesome. I love it. And thank you for doing that because that is so cool. All you got to do is look at those pictures and see the smiles on people's faces with a certificate and to know that it's had an impact. And it's too bad Wade doesn't know the impact that he's had, which it's so cool. If one of the things I want to make sure that I ask you is this. If you wanted a reader to remember one thing, a reader or a listener to remember one thing about your message, what would that be?
That young people are extraordinary. You have to learn the secrets to unleashing how extraordinary they are. And that if you look at them as a challenge, they'll be a challenge. If you look at them as a resource to be unleashed and untapped, and pushed forward beyond what you think is possible, then that's what they'll become. And that's what they'll see. And that's what they'll move forward on. That's what I'm passionate about.
Love it. We are finishing up now, and I just wanted to make sure that if someone wanted to connect further with you, where would you send them?
I think the best place is my website. So going to markcperna.com. So it's M-A-R-K, middle initial C, Perna, P-E-R-N-A, no dots or dashes, just markcperna.com. All the information about my book, my journey is on there. You can even jump off to my business sites and the Be a Wade site is all jump offable from there. You can connect with me on social media. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, and all those links are on my markcperna.com website. You can also, if I can too, is just to, to point people is that if you check out the book, you can read the intro chapter online for free. It's available to anyone. You don't have to sign up to do that. You can just read the first chapter. And if it grabs you, jump in. But there's also a resources section with lots of free materials. So there's a full book discussion guide that has all the content and application questions for organizations or groups that want to take what they learn in Answering Why and drive it through an organization or a small group or a professional learning community. There's also an action guide with three 30-second ways to maximize your interactions with the younger generation. And then there's also a parent conversation starter, to like a career conversation starter with their child, so at any age. And it kind of gives the tools and the tips on how to start a conversation at a very young age or middle age or, you know, or even early 20s. How do you start the conversation about lifestyle and career so you can start moving young people towards their light at the end of the tunnel and creating a want to in their life? So all of those resources are free. You don't have to sign up. You can just take them. They're in PDFs and they're beautiful documents that you can forward or share with neighbors or whatever. But it's, I wanted to get the information. I wanted to get a bunch of things out there for free so that people could be more impactful in the way they deal with young people.
And thank you for doing that. That's awesome. It's great being able to have access to that without having, you know, before you actually go out and get the book. But I got to tell you, anybody read, you know, listening to this right now, you're going to, after you read the first chapter, you're going to want to read the rest of the story. So, but the, you know, one of the things that I thought you might want to do, would you like to share a little bit about Tools for Schools?
Yeah, well, you know, Tools for Schools, what we call TFS, is my company. I started it 22 years ago, and we work with you know, educational organizations and business organizations across North America, and we've created a lot of products and services to help community colleges and technical colleges and, you know, K-12 school systems and career centers and universities attract and retain significantly more of the right students into the right programs and pathways for all the right reasons. So we do all of this in order to try to understand the younger generations as an organization, and then how do we get them focused on their light at the end of the tunnel so that we complete them and graduate significantly more of them. And we've been wildly successful. I'm so humbled and grateful for what we've been able to accomplish as a team. And I've got a remarkable team of people that work with me. And I'm so proud of what we've been able to accomplish in seemingly a short amount of time, 20 some years. And we're growing, and this has just been a great journey.
Excellent. And I will provide links to how to get in contact with you through the websites, and as well as you know, the Mark C. Perna website, as well as the Tools for Schools and your social media links and so forth in the show notes. So everyone listening, make sure that's where you go and take a look. A couple questions, if we can sneak these in. You know, if you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
It's all about building relationships. Everything you do is relationship driven. So it's the way you communicate, it's the way you connect, it's the way you empower students by seeing the best in what they are and not necessarily the challenge of what they are. So if I had teachers here, I would say understand who they are, ask them who they are, understand the lifestyles that are important to them, and be able to drive how much you respect them first, and they will turn around and respect you. But they have to feel it from you first.
Excellent advice. Excellent. Just right on the money, too. Last question. Do you have someone in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be, and what would you say?
That's a great question. I love that question. You know, I joke many times, you know, as I think back, people ask me all the time, you're like, so, you know, do you have a favorite teacher from way back? And I was like, you know, I really don't, you know, and it's kind of, you know, kind of a funny way. I usually say this in my speeches, you know, I was invited to speak at Harvard, you know, a few years ago, and I was so proud to be able to speak at Harvard because I had no way of getting there based on my school performance, you know, in high school. And I joke all the time and I say, you know, I was in the half of the class that made the top half possible because I was not a great student. So a lot of my teachers and mentors came after school. So one of my favorites and the person I would love to thank, and actually in a very beautiful way, I was able to thank this gentleman was Brian Tracy. You know, so he's an international motivational speaker, and I listen to, you know, he's written, I think 86 books has made the bestseller list, 86 number one bestsellers. Wow. He's sold 50 million books across the world and tapes and all kinds of stuff. And I listened to The Psychology of Achievement for 3 straight years back in the mid 90s. And I listened to it, you know, like every couple of weeks I would put it back on in my car and I would listen to it and listen to it and listen to it. And I was able to a year and a half ago interview him to use him in my book. And we chatted for well over an hour, and I was able to thank him for being a tremendous mentor in my life. So I was able to accomplish it, Steve. I'm feeling good about that. So
that's excellent. Thank you so much for sharing. Mark, thank you so much for talking with me and sharing your book, Answering Why, Unleashing Passion, Purpose, and Performance in Younger Generations. I enjoyed talking with you, and I think I will remember the weight factor and that favorite quotation, "We just decided to go forever." You know, it's just awesome discussion, and I thank you so much. Wishing you the very best.
Take care. I wish you all the best too, Steve. Thank you for having me on. It was an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.